And we're back. This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis. Good morning. Welcome back to our discussion today about a number of items in our national and even international news that have reverberations and reflections on our previous discussions about the United States Supreme Court and the decisions it has made in a number of different areas. Right before the break, we were chatting about executive privilege and the fact that Steve Bannon just yesterday was found guilty after only a few hours of deliberation by a federal jury of contempt of Congress, two counts of contempt of Congress for his failure to appear before the January 6th committee and provide them with documents that had been requested by that group. Steve Bannon found guilty after the judge, the presiding judge, a fellow named Carl Nichols, a federal district court judge in the District of Columbia, had all but shut down the executive privilege defenses that his attorney and Bannon had hoped to present during the course of the trial. As a result of that, his attorney fairly famously said, gosh, I don't have a lot to work with. And indeed, during the course of the trial, which was fairly, fairly brief, the government itself only called two witnesses to establish what? That the subpoenas had in fact been served upon Mr. Bannon, commanding him to appear, and then he failed to do so. A real simple case. Bannon himself did not testify. Obviously, he has a right to do so if he chooses to do so, but also an absolute right not to testify. That's our Fifth Amendment, not to provide testimony against himself or in support of his position, and he chose not to testify during the course of the trial. Case going to the jury, and the jury again finding him guilty of both counts. Both of those misdemeanor counts carry with them a grand total of 2 years, one year each. Under the sentencing guidelines, which will provide Judge Nichols with a fairly good sense about what should probably happen here, the sentence will probably be at least 30 days, so significantly less than a total of 2 years, although the judge could go as high as 2 years. Unlikely he will do that. And a sentencing date set for later this year, in the fall of this year. So Steve Bannon, in the interim, is on his own recognizance, having now been convicted of those offenses under the federal criminal code. You recall that Steve Bannon was also the recipient of a pardon from the former president, President Trump, with respect to his prior conduct involving a fraudulent attempt to gather monies and engage in other efforts that were the subjects of a previous prosecution. Steve Bannon previously pardoned by the president. Unlikely, highly, highly unlikely that he will benefit from the same pardon from this president. Only a current president, as you well know, can grant pardons under the Constitution. So Steve Bannon almost certainly going to be sentenced in the fall of this year, promising an appeal, which he has every right to do again to the D.C. Court of Appeals. Highly likely that appeal will not be successful and that will be affirmed. Question whether or not the Supreme Court will take up this case if he chooses to pursue it. The Supreme Court, again, having said in a number of cases, most recently back in January, that the concept of executive privilege is limited and certainly limited to the present existing incumbent in the office, not something that others post-presidency can invoke. And so significant information and a significant development there with respect to not only the January 6th committee, but also this concept under the Constitution of executive privilege. And finally, the other big news story this past week, going way out to California this time. This comes from the pen and the words of Governor Gavin Newsom out there in California. You may recall that Gavin Newsom, the governor there, had responded fairly badly, orally and in writing, other circumstances, to the decision by the United States Supreme Court not to interrupt the decision by the Texas legislature to impose a six-week ban on abortion, this Senate Bill 8 that was the subject of an awful lot of focus prior to the Dobbs decision. And the United States Supreme Court, way back when, had decided not to interrupt that case from going ahead, the decision to permit the Texans to enforce that law, in particular to enforce that through this so-called bounty system that said that if you find anybody out there who is violating the six-week ban on abortions, you, in a civil proceeding, not by the government, not in another tribunal, but in a civil court, can in fact sue that person. And if you are successful in establishing that that person or people engage in a violation of that 6-week ban in Texas, what do you get? You get at least $10,000 for every offense conduct that you prove in court. Gavin Newsom responded very badly, not only to that law, but also to the decision of the Supreme Court not to interrupt, not to turn that back, a time when, again, Roe versus Wade was still the law of this land. And he promised at that time, way back in December, that he was going to use that concept. It's basically saying, gee, if the United States Supreme Court supports this notion of permitting private civil litigants to pursue people who are violating the law, I'm going to use that same kind of a concept. And so he proposed, not so much tongue-in-cheek, he proposed something eventually called Senate Bill 1327 in California that had to do with those who deal in banned guns in litigation. And basically, the legislation that he was proposing and that he's promised now to sign in California awards, yes, that's right, $10,000 per weapon and legal fees to plaintiffs who successfully sue anybody who imports and distributes, who manufactures or sells assault-type weapons, 50-caliber rifles or guns without serial numbers or parts that can be used to build those firearms, those banned under the new law. And again, taking his instruction from the Supreme Court and from Texas, a new law coming in California that says that you can enforce that law by going into civil court as a private petitioner, identifying anybody who violates the law, and if you're successful in doing so, the court would presumably award you $10,000. Now, once again, Gavin Newsom, not a fan of this overall process, but saying, United States Supreme Court, if you're going to permit that kind of enforcement of the gun laws, of the abortion laws, rather, the privacy laws in America, I'm going to use the same concept, the same legal notion, and apply that to address our guns cancer, the problem that we have with the consistent, catastrophic use of guns in America to kill people using high-capacity weapons, including the very kinds of guns that are the focus of the California law. So interesting, again, coming out of the United States Supreme Court, both in connection with privacy rights and the decision by the Supreme Court not to interrupt the Texas case, but also coming out of that Bruin case. You recall, well, the New York case that said that with respect to the practice, the 100-year-old practice out of New York State that required people to get permission to explain why it is they need to carry a gun in the open public. The Supreme Court said, expanding on this prior case called Heller, Supreme Court said, yes, indeed, you've got a constitutional right under the Second Amendment to carry weapons in America publicly. Some of the justices noting that it may not have a huge impact for those states that do not require that sort of explanation, but nonetheless establishing a whole new standard for the review of guns legislation and attempts to address our gun problem in America. We'll learn more about what the impact of Bruin is in the times ahead. But again, significant issues in the news every single week, including just the past couple of days related to our discussions over the past 5-6 weeks of constitutional decisions and Supreme Court decisions in the United States of America. Now we're going to turn to our next major arc of discussion. Again, taking your questions, taking your comments, taking your perspectives this morning and every morning at 844-967-2789, the Shah right here in downtown Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. The next arc that we're going to be pursuing. Connor is here with me in the studio, handling and facilitating your calls, getting them to me so that we can have more discussion about the next arc. We're going to chat now about academics. It may strike a lot of young people and older people in America that it's somewhat premature in the middle of the summer to begin to talk about the new school year, and perhaps it is, but actually it is not. We know well that school teachers, administrators, and students, parents, everyone involved in the academic process, beginning even in late July here, to begin to think about what's happening in a month from now as schools reopen. Schools in the public sector, in the private sector, schools that educate our K through 12 students, colleges, universities throughout the nation as well, beginning to reopen in about 4 weeks from now. And so we're going to start right now with an academic review of what the Constitution has said, what the Supreme Court has said about academic academics in America, focusing specifically today upon students, later on chatting about teachers, and then talking about curriculums and school books and efforts to ban certain kinds of books that may be out there. We're going to chat about the implications of all this under the First Amendment to the Constitution that says once again that there is a freedom of speech in America, also freedom of the press. What does that mean? What does that mean when it comes to academics, to teaching, to students, to their parents, their teachers, administrators in America in 2022? I'm going to delve into that in the remaining time here on Morning Cannolis today and continue that discussion next week as we begin to talk about academics and educational freedoms in 21st century America. Join us for that discussion right after this coming break. This is the Shaw and Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM, 844-967-2789.